Hello, hello, folks, and welcome to the third edition of our 2018 Falcoholic Postgame Podcast. I'm your host, Corey Woodruff. Thank you for listening, of course, and for joining us once more. I've got a special guest with me this week. He's no stranger to any of our Falcoholic podcast listeners. He is, a guy that's been with the Falcoholic much longer than I have. Falcoholic DW, David Walker, is joining us. He's obviously an editor and writer for the Falcoholic, as well as one of the hosts of our Falcoholic podcast. So, DW, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem, Corey.
So, before we get talking about the actual preseason game last night, I wanted to briefly touch on what happened today in Jacksonville Sunday. If you're listening to this as it goes up later this afternoon, there was a shooting at a Madden event that was going on, kind of a Madden Live tournament. I know that there have been some fatalities and more that have been injured. We're still obviously seeing those details pour in. And if there's obviously there's a bit of a massively disturbing video going around where two young men are actually playing as the Falcons on a game, and then a couple of seconds into their actual gameplay, the shooting occurs. If you can watch it, do watch it, just to kind of get a very good visual representation of how something like this tends to go. This is obviously going to be something that is on a lot of our minds and our hearts as the next couple of days and weeks roll on, since we're all tied into this football community one way or the other, and it, particularly with the most visual representation of what happened today being a Falcons gameplay, I feel like it touches home uniquely more than sometimes these things do, as much as it still affects you regardless of what the situation is. There are lots of people that have lots of different views on how we need to address these issues that listen to this podcast, I have no doubt. I tend to fall one way and you might fall another. I know we all react to things like this out of fear. I know we all react to things like this and trying to figure out why they happen and how we can stop them. I don't want to go on a big political tirade as much as I would want to on what I think should be done when these things happen, because I don't want to alienate the conversation if you feel one way and I feel another. But I feel like at this point, these things keep happening and we can't continue to sit on our hands. I don't know what the answer is, what the precise answer is. I feel like I have a grasp. But, when different people want to accomplish the same thing and want to get there a different way, it tends to make the process go much harder. So I would just say, as you communicate with fellow people, your fellow Falcons fans, and as we all have different ideas, let's try to always remember we're all trying to accomplish the same thing, that we all hate things like this, that we all try to find sense in the senseless when evil strikes, and it strikes so close to home. There's just two guys trying to hang out with each other playing as the Falcons on Madden. So just remember that this week as you're going through discourse on social media with people in your life. You're not always ever going to agree, and you may viciously disagree on how we accomplish this. And, I'm not a gun person. I believe pretty fervently in common sense gun reform, and I know you may not, but I don't want you to be the enemy here. I don't want you to think I'm your enemy. I want us all to try to find some way to at least agree that this is bad, and that whatever is going on in our governing body, they've not done enough. And whether that's additional security, whether that's taking better steps to make sure guns stay out of it, I don't know what the exact answer is, and I don't want to pretend that I do. But I would just say, as we try to focus on other things for this episode, which obviously is why you're here. It's why we're, continuing to do this, is to talk about the things in our world that matter to us and that have meaning, that we love and enjoy. We can't shut the real world out, and this does hit particularly close. So just, the biggest thing I can say is just always remember that we're all trying to accomplish the same thing. And while we all have different ideas of how to get there, don't view an opposing idea as your enemy. Even if you think that it's awful and bad and it's not going to help anything, we all want to get the same result. So just remember that this week. Obviously, our thoughts and prayers are with those who have been affected. And if those guys that were playing that are Falcons fans, then obviously we're with you, and we hope you're okay and that you are able to come back with us and talk about this team as, we sillily do, because sometimes the real world does creep into where we try to find comfort and safety, and it doesn't really give us much of an option. So, I don't want to, dwell on this too much, because we have, things that we do want to focus on as we try to, not let things like this always take all of our focus, because if you do, I think it can just drag you down too far. But yeah, that's just what I've got on that. We live in hard times. We live in the difficult days, but at the same time, like, use the unification you have as a part of a community where you all love something to be able to bond and help us all solve this. Because I think that it's a community that can sometimes bring people together that ends up having greater effect on how we can solve problems, even if we disagree. So that's what I've got, man. I hope that's not too much of a, you know, to keep us off focus for what we're trying to do, but it's obviously the most important thing we ever face in our society is how we, you know, are able to interact with each other in spaces we call safe, and, you know, trying to bridge the community that we do have. And when the community does get disrupted, like it did today, I always feel like we do need to address that and reaffirm that we all want the same thing. We just don't always find the right way to communicate with each other how we want to solve it. So that's what I've got there. You know, Dave, do you want to add anything with that, or do you think we're good to go ahead and do the preseason talk?
Let's jump to the preseason.
All right, man. I think that sounds good. Obviously, the team went into Jacksonville last night, and people were upset, I think would be the best thing to say. It was not a particularly happy night on Falcons Twitter for the way that the team might have done. They chose to sit a lot of starters, guys like, we obviously knew going in that Julio, Devonta, probably not Desmond Trufant would play, but then they also decided to sit Ricardo Allen, Deion Jones, lots of key faces that, you know, do lots of key things for the Falcons. And, you know, last night, I think a lot of people got to learn what it would look like if the Falcons didn't have lots of good players on their team. There was not a ton of talent that was being fielded. Obviously, Matt Ryan played a couple of series. The offensive line got some decent reps in. Tevin Coleman was the feature back. Mohamed Sanu and Calvin Ridley both got some decent run. Austin Hooper, of course. But, you know, you got to see kind of a zombified version, I think, of Atlanta football, particularly on defense, where you had your two biggest communicators and your three biggest communicators and solidifiers, with your top corner, your free safety, and your middle linebacker all out of the equation. And you kind of saw how that might go. So I'll start with you, man. How do you take this game and try to personify it with everything that was kind of keeping it from being what it could have been, I think?
So I think the first thing to remember is that the way you win the preseason in the NFL is not by the points, it's not by the plays, it's not by the record. It is by getting out with the least number of injuries. And in that regard, the Falcons have won the preseason. They got through three preseason games without any significant injuries to any key starters. And I think if you look on the opposite side of the ball, case in point with the Jaguars and Marquise Lee and that brutal injury he suffered on the field with the tackle from Domonte Kazee. And that just shows you that these games don't matter. They do not matter. I know we're back into the mindset of wanting our team to do well, but Dan Quinn's teams have never played well in the preseason for game three. Go back even to 2016 in the top 10 offensive year for the Falcons, and they looked terrible in that game as well. So it doesn't mean anything from a performance standpoint, and even more so to your point with so many guys being out and not a part of the game. I think you have to take all of it with a grain of salt. But to me, it's a success because they got out of the preseason without any major injuries. And right now, that's the biggest thing as we get ready for real football in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think when you look at what happened with Jacksonville, I mean, I don't know of how many fans they're going to have that are going to be jumping up and down too much about how their offense looked, because they might, you know, we don't know the extent of Lee's knee injury. If it ends up being serious and he's out the year, that they lose their top target on offense, and that's a nightmare. I mean, that's a truly nightmare situation. I mean, you can say that they put themselves in that position when they let Allen Robinson walk. We won't spend too much time on the Jags in terms of their front office fallacies. Obviously, they've built a heck of a defensive line there, but no, I think when you look at the other team, nobody majorly got hurt. I know that Foyer kind of got pulled out of the game briefly, and he went back in and got his ankle taped up. Russell Gage looked like he was limping a little bit when he got up with one of the closing plays, but we've not heard anything his way, so maybe he was just pulled something very briefly, and then he'll be fine. But no, they came out healthy, and it wasn't the best performance, but again, like historically under Quinn, they don't usually look all that great in the preseason. And it's because I think in the preseason, Quinn doesn't really want to focus on as much as what he thinks his team will be, as much as how much he thinks his team will react to this or that or this or that. It seems like they do a lot of situation football in these situations. Like, you know, it's like when they put out, like, I remember then that Jacksonville, it's either the Jets game or Kansas City. They put Ito Smith in a short yardage situation. And like while they were trying to drive down the field. And to me, that represents preseason. Like if that were the regular season, there's no way on earth they're going to put Ito Smith if they're trying to drive and a touchdown. That's not going to happen. They're going to have Devonta out there. They're going to scheme a better play to Tevin. They're going to get a short pass going. They're not going to do in the preseason what we see them do in the regular season because the stakes are different. You're not trying in the preseason to actually accomplish anything other than get your guys in game shape, get your play calling kinks worked out, and get your younger guys some room to run and earn spots and kind of get them evaluated. And again, preseason is good for a guy like Calvin Ridley. I know that he had some drops, but again, like if he had, that was a problem at Bama. So if he needs to get these drops out of the way as he gets acclimated, my gosh, let's do them now. Okay. Like let's take this time now to let him get this worked out of his system. Because if we get into September and he's still making these mistakes, and it was because the team didn't want to, you know, give him the run in the preseason he needed, then that's a problem. And obviously it's a bigger deal if he drops a pass against the Eagles than he did against Jacksonville, because the Jacksonville game, you're not playing for anything. You're playing for invisible peanuts. Like this means nothing. And again, I think for a lot of people, you get upset because you've been without football for so long. You're coming off a playoff loss that was not as tough as the last one, obviously, but you know, it's still kind of crummy. And you want to see the team be able and perform like they've been performing in your head all year. And when they don't do that immediately, I can get why people would be concerned. Like, oh my gosh, look at what Jacksonville's doing. Because you begin to get border envy for like, this team is over on the other side of things is doing really good. But it's preseason. Kings are not crowned in preseason. There are a lot of teams that are going to look good in August that are not going to look good in September because they're trying to accomplish things that other teams are not trying to accomplish. And their goals are different, and it's a weird hodgepodge of trying to evaluate what's actually happening. But I would just say, if you're a Falcons fan, like, take away what you want to take away, but just be careful to take away too much of anything good or bad, because I think that even if we get excited about something, that doesn't mean that excitement's always going to carry over. So I would just say, take it with a grain of salt, because right now we are in the land of mirages, and if you find the wrong thing to hinge on, you're just going to get yourself worked up for no reason.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but, you know, let's kind of talk about the offense, or I like to call it the zombie offense, because this is like the Falcons, like, you know, disaster zone scenario where both of their best offensive weapons are not on the field, and they're trying to, you know, go up against a really, really, really good defensive line without the threat of Julio Jones or Devonta Freeman there. Tevin's doing his best. I want to talk about Tevin for a second, because he's really had a good preseason. I know that's not something we take for granted, that we have two starting running backs that are able to do what they're doing. But I thought he has looked really nice behind this offensive line. Not every gain is a big, you know, is for big yardage, but he's had multiple runs of 10, 15 yards so far in August. And I think he's beginning to get more comfortable in this kind of adjusted Sarkisian scheme. Because to me, Tevin was one of those guys last year that obviously they limited him being on as a part of the passing game, but he ended up being a better running quarterback as he's beginning to get older. And that was kind of his problem when he was first getting started out, is that he needed some room to get downhill to where he was able to do what he was best at. But now he seems like he's getting more comfortable with these situations where he kind of has to just get the dirty yards if he can.
Yeah, and I think with Tevin in particular, he's there's a lot of speculation on whether or not he's going to be here next year or not. Most people thinking he will probably walk because the Falcons are not going to be able to afford to pay him. But I think there's a tremendous benefit to using him while you've got him and getting him involved in the passing game in particular. We saw how dangerous he could be in 2016. He's got that elite-level speed when he gets going. There's very few linebackers in the league that can keep pace with him. So he becomes a bit of a matchup nightmare. I've often wondered why we don't see Freeman and Coleman on the field together more, just to create a bunch of matchup confusion for the defense. So it is good to see him get going. I do want to see where Devonta is at in a couple weeks. And it's interesting that we haven't heard of any lingering necessarily issues with Freeman. I think they're just being precautious, and I'm more than happy with that. But it'll be very interesting to see what kind of play Coleman gets once the regular season gets here.
Yeah, I hope that Sarkisian would get more comfortable with being more risky with those guys, because there's a really nice play last night where he put Tevin out wide and used him as a receiver, which was something that he struggled with getting acclimated to last year. And obviously Tevin is so talented when he's just one of those guys on the outside where the teams just don't exactly know how to attack it. Like, do you put a safety on him and, you know, try to use him like a receiver? Do you want to put more of a linebacker on him when he has that power, when he gets running? So it kind of makes the coverage a bit tricky for the defense. And he actually went out wide and got a nice pass in, I think, for a couple of maybe 15, 20 yards. Yep. I think that was a nice sign of the progressions that Sarkisian is making. I'm tempering my expectations for some sort of a Shanahan renaissance like we saw from 15 to 16 with Kyle. But I think you're going to get more of just a really solid play caller. Like, he's good. He's not great, but he's good. He can use the talent and kind of let the talent guide things. Because to me, that's what the Falcons did so well in 2012. Dirk Koetter has never been an amazing play caller, but he's just real competent. He's really solid. He can have some really good years if his talent will meet. Like, I think what happened in Tampa Bay is that offense doesn't quite have the quarterback talent that Atlanta has, and it's not able to use some of those weapons as effectively. And it's kind of hurting poor Koetter, because he's just like, oh gosh, I really miss Matt Ryan, because we had some good times. But, you know, they were a fair weather offense back in those days. I think this offense is more built to kind of withstand some of those hard defenses that come down to town, because, you know, when Atlanta, we get like the most like inch of adversity in the Smith era, they would tend to kind of wilt away or hope that they could kind of get a big playoff or here or there. But these Quinn Falcons are a lot tougher. They're a lot more talented. They're a lot deeper. And I think that allows for maybe the play calling to not quite have to be where we saw it in 16 for them to find postseason success. Austin Hooper and Logan Paulson both got involved in the passing game last night. My favorite play of the night was watching him like dump a pass off to Paulson and seeing Paulson like lumber down the field. He was tackled by one of the Jacksonville linebackers, just because you can tell Paulson was like, yeah, I didn't come here to catch anything. I'm just here to block. I'm just here to help out. But it would be funny. He seems like he's going to be the new Toy Lolo, where it's just, it's always awkward when he gets involved in the passing game. But yeah, if you have a really talented coordinator and a good quarterback like Ryan, you can tend to make things work. And it's not like Paulson has never caught a ball before. Like, he's done it decently well in the past. So I thought that was kind of funny, but obviously it's important for Hooper to be doing well. Let's talk about the drops for a second, because I feel like that's been the story with the offense so far. Through this Jacksonville game was the fact that they did drop some bad passes Saturday. Do you think that's something that people should be getting as worried about as they are?
Well, I think when you look at the preseason, some of the things that you do pay attention to are the individual traits, the individual performances. So I do think there is some concern with the drops. We saw two from Calvin Ridley, and that was something that he struggled with at Alabama. So I think some fans are openly questioning if that is something that he's gotten control of or not. We saw one from Sanu in the end zone. That was, you know, we call it a drop, but you could also argue the defenders really crashed in on him at the right time. And then we saw one from Austin Hooper on the screenplay. So it is concerning, because it was a big factor last year, but it's not something I'm going to lose sleep over. I do think Calvin Ridley needs to spend about an entire week just sitting in front of the jugs machine, letting those balls come rocketing towards him. And to be fair, there have been other players who've come into the league with drops issues that have gotten it under control. Let's just hope Ridley does the same thing. I'm not worried about any of the other guys. I think, you know, anyone who doesn't want any drops, that's not a reasonable expectation. But for Ridley, simply because he carried that reputation in from Alabama, I do want to see him improve on that. And I think it will get better simply from the fact that he won't be the top receiver on the field like he was last night. Once Julio is back in the game and rotating in, I think it's going to take some pressure off of him from that standpoint, and should help alleviate some of those hiccups.
Yeah, I think that's on point. I think when you look at his career at Bama, you don't want to automatically assume that he wasn't going to have to come into the NFL and get used to the speed of the new game. Obviously, Alabama ran a pro offense. That's about as friendly as an NFL offense as you can run while you're in the college setting. But at the same time, if he struggled with that in college, he was going to struggle with that a little bit at first when he got to the NFL, because your old habits from your college career that you worked so hard to get rid of are going to begin to come back a bit when you're getting acclimated to a new speed and to a new level of play. So I think for Falcons fans that are really concerned about that or want to, you know, really break that down with him, I would just say maybe he just needs a preseason to get it out of his system. And again, he'll know that he needs to work on that. And if he has some drop balls right now, it's already in the rear view and doesn't really matter for anything. So at least he now knows something to work on. And I think that's sometimes mistakes in the preseason are good when they happen there because they allow you to be able to work things out of your system that don't happen in September and don't happen in October when you're getting into the playoff setting. So it's like, yeah, you don't want to see it now, but hey, if that helps it not happen in the future, then drop as many passes as you want, kid, because I'm fine with it. You know, you never want to see those recur. So hopefully he knows to work on that. And obviously, you know, with Sanu, he really improved his hands when he got to Atlanta, so that shouldn't be much of an issue there. Let's talk about the offensive line for a second, because I think that's a legitimate thing people were worried about. They didn't look amazing against Jacksonville's pass rush. Do you think that was more just Jacksonville having the resources and they're just going to do that this year to teams? Or do you think it's more of the blocking is going to continue to need to kind of work on being able to deal with these elite lines?
So I think it's a combination of factors. Number one, the Jaguars have debatably one of the top three defensive line units in the NFL. Sure. They're easily one of the best. I don't think anyone would argue with that. So, you know, that's some really, really fierce competition, and those guys were playing hard. The other thing is in the Falcons scheme, when you run a wide zone blocking scheme, you're going for offensive linemen that are typically more athletic. They can move faster, which means usually they're a little bit lighter and their pass rush, their pass blocking capabilities sometimes takes a little bit of a dip, meaning that they're not as stout. So they are prone to be overwhelmed by bigger defensive lines. Now, where you get that protection back is in the use of play action. The wide zone blocking scheme is almost always deployed with a ton of play action, which is what we saw in 2016. You get the defense looking for those wide zone blocking schemes. You play action out of it. And what you see usually is a quarterback in the backfield with no one around him. And that's a way to protect the offensive line from having to do a traditional 5 or 7 step drop back and give the quarterback 2.5, 3 seconds in the pocket. And I think in the preseason, you're just not going to show all of that up front. And in many ways, Quinn is probably, as you mentioned, he's trying to put these guys in situations where he wants to see how they hold up against the best competition. He wants to see how they hold up in traditional pass blocking. And honestly, I'm not that worried because I think in many ways for pass blocking, the team will scheme around it. The team is designed, this offense is designed to scheme around potential protection issues. And we just aren't seeing it because it's the preseason.
Yeah, and I think it's also like you forget these guys are not going 100%. This is about probably a 70-75%. Amount for a lot of these starters, because I think when Marquise Lee got hurt, everybody's participation level went down about 10% because everyone thought, oh my gosh, that's not going to be me. And I think that, you know, you have guys that are like DeMonte Casey, who is always going to go 100% because he's trying to make a case to the staff to put him on the field since he's not an entrenched starter. You've got guys like, you know, your Deidre Sanats, who again is also a rookie, trying to justify getting time on the field. But I think for a lot of these other guys, like they may make plays at times because the football speed's just a little different and the coverages might be just a little bit different because they're trying to work something out here, trying this, trying that. I think this is a very good offensive line. I don't think it's a great, great offensive line because I think a little bit of their talent, like I read some kind of about the Shanahan year, was a bit built up by the coaching. I think Jake Matthews is a very, very solid left tackle. Levitre is a very solid right guard. Obviously, Max Elite. Fusco seems to be decent enough, and Ryan Schrader is a good right tackle. It really only has one elite player in that unit. So you're not really looking at like one of those like elite cowboy lines or like what you might see with Chicago is going to have this year. Like you don't exactly have one of these offensive lines that are just like amazing, but it's a good one. It's just a good offensive line, and that's a lot better for me than some of the other teams in the NFL. So I think, you know, they probably did get beat a couple of times just in general because of the talent Jacksonville has, but at the same time, it's preseason, and this is just a different world. So let's just see how they do in week one against Philly, because obviously that's probably the premier defensive line in the league. And thankfully they're getting that one out of the way early and might not have Carson Wentz to deal with in that situation. But, you know, I think it's just preseason. You don't want to read too much into too much of anything. Let's talk about the defense and, you know, let's kind of flip the switch and talk about the defensive line. What are you seeing from them this preseason that encourages you and maybe what you'd like to see more of?
So I think we're seeing what we need to see in limited action. And I know some fans were complaining about the lack of sacks last night, but realistically, the Falcons D-line was giving the Jaguars they were giving them a hard time. There wasn't a throw that Blake Bortles made in the first half that didn't seem to be contested in some form or fashion. And I think the eyes of Falcons Nation are fixed on Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley. Those guys both got pressure during the game. Maybe not as consistently as we want to see. Grady Jarrett was an absolute wrecking ball. I thought Jack Crawford looked good in the action that he saw. I think he had one of the sacks on the evening. Mm. And, you know, honestly, I think it is still a work in progress. I don't know that we're going to have a top five pass rush. I just don't think it's there yet. I do think this could, from a pass rush standpoint, I think they will be opportunistic. And I think there's enough room for improvement this season that it will keep the defense as a top 10 defense, but the pass rush will still at times be frustrating. So if you're expecting an elite pass rush, I don't think we're there yet. I think we're hoping that Vic Beasley has a monster season and that Tack has a monster season. But at this point, I will take consistent pressure over spotty sacks. And I think we saw that last night. It led to one of the early turnovers. And that is right now, those will eventually become sacks throughout the course of a game. And I think that's, you know, the interior pressure for me really was starting to come home a good bit with Jarrett and Crawford, particularly in third downs, really causing havoc. So I think we've seen enough to be encouraged, even if we aren't seeing as much as we'd like to.
Yeah, I think that's on point. You look at a defensive line with the talent-wise that really may only have one or two players that already are in the top 10 of their position. Maybe it's only Grady. I think Grady right now is probably a top 10 defensive tackle. He is just so very good at what he does, and it's just continuing to get better, and it's so disruptive. I think Vic, on a good day, is a top 10 pass rusher. He has all the tools to just absolutely just blast past anybody he goes against. But the problem with Vic is just the consistency issue. He's not that every day. And I think in 16, you saw kind of him flash that more so than flashing what he did last year, which is kind of a pass rusher that can only do speed and can struggles against some of these tackles that are kind of wise to what he's able to do. Hopefully we see more of the 16 Vic this year where he can kind of get back into having that conversation of being a Pro Bowler. He's got that in him and he always will, but I think it just kind of doesn't always show up. And I don't think it's a effort issue at all. I think it's just more of a, he's just got his game and he's used to it. And in the NFL, sometimes that works and sometimes that doesn't. But everywhere else, I mean, obviously we all think Tack can get there, but he's not yet. We hope that, you know, we can get Terrell McClain back to where he was in Dallas. And you hope Deidre Sanat comes through. I mean, obviously Brooks Reed is good, but it's a defensive line that just doesn't have a lot of elite talent. It's a defensive line that you hope, like you say, cohesively can get those pressures and get those disruptions to a decent amount. But, you know, this is not what Dan Quinn had when he was in Seattle. He had Bennett and Averill, which were just a heck of a bookend. I know we all hope Tack and Vic can get there, and I think there's potential that it could one day, but I think we're not, again, like you said, we're not there yet. This is still the one part of the roster that they have had some struggles with finding consistency at. Like, they've gotten just about every other spot pretty well taken care of, with some, except for maybe tight end. We still got to see Hooper put that breakout year in that we all think he's going to have. But it's ironically been the defensive line that has at times not been quite where it needs to be, which I know is the irony considering Dan Quinn's history and all the coaching talent that they have there. But I'm hoping this unit has its best year in Quinn's time with the unit, the kind of talent it has now. They seem to really rely on what they're able to do with their, and they put two first-round picks in. So obviously there's been an effort there to get new talent in and rebuild this unit, but I still feel like they're a bit
off from being exactly where I think that they want to be long term. But I think that in 7 and 18 that they could build towards more of a future where they have a really good pass rush and have a really good interior pressure, have a really good run stop with what they have as defensive tackle. But I don't know if they're quite there yet. So maybe they need this year to be able to build up to that for the future. So that's, to me, the one spot of the roster this season that I think could maybe hold them back in key moments would be the pass rush, particularly from the interior. We've got to see more consistency from Vic. We've got to see Tack begin to grow up more into what he can be. But I think if those guys do what they need to do, that it will be okay. What did you notice from a defense without its three best players last night? I mean, obviously you can maybe put Grady in there, but I think when you're talking about the most important players in the Falcons defense, Deion Jones, obviously, and Ricardo Allen and Desmond Trufant, because you take away the guy that people don't want to throw to and you take away the two best communicators. So do you think that and obviously that plays a part, but do you think that probably really hurt them, particularly when those screens came in?
Oh, definitely. And I think those screens were the embodiment of what happens when you don't have the right communicators in the backfield. And in particular, Ricardo and Deion are the two key guys in that regard. And I think, you know, we saw some good things. We saw some good things from Duke Riley, who I think has gotten progressively better with each game in the preseason. So that's been encouraging. Foye Lekun, I think, has a good future on this team as a prime backup at linebacker, and potentially more down the road. I really like what we've seen from some of the other guys down the roster. DeMonte Kazee would be a potential starter at free safety for almost half the teams in this league. And we have the luxury of having him as a backup to a very solid and reliable starter, Ricardo Allen. But when you see those screens, those are usually the things that veteran play callers like Ricardo Allen and now Deion Jones in his third year, that they begin to sniff out, they begin to see and get guys aligned. They go up to the defensive line and say, watch out for the screen, don't over-pursue. They tell their partners at linebacker and at corner to keep an eye on the lanes and to make sure that the offensive line isn't trying to create running lanes for a play like that. And I think that's what we saw. And I think that was, the Jags took advantage of that. Once you get those guys back, I think the number of times that those plays will be successful will drop in half, if not more so. And I think when you take that into consideration with what the Falcons did against the Jags first team, missing those guys, I was actually somewhat impressed with the overall performance of the defense. Even though we gave up the one touchdown, if our defense can be missing all of those guys and just give up one touchdown in the first half, that is actually a pretty solid performance overall. If your defense is going to hold another team on their home field to 14 to 17 points without three or four key starters, that's actually a win. That's a big win. So I was impressed with the young guys, and I think missing those guys was a great opportunity for some of these guys to get some playing time and to show that if we have to rely on them in some key situations, I feel like we've got some good depth on our defense that we haven't had in the past.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this has got to be, again, when people say this is the most talented roster in Falcons history, they're not joking. I mean, this is just a, I hate to use the joke, this is an absolute unit, okay? This is an absolute, like, this is quite a lad for, looking at it. Boom, boom. Gosh, I can't believe I stooped that low. But you know what? It's okay. No, this is just, they've got so much. And when you look at, people at SB Nation saying that Garrison Smith is going to be our breakout player, and I don't even know if right now he's going to make the roster. Like, that's talent. Right. People are, looking at guys that are performing that may not even be around here. And again, there's going to be a lot of these guys that end up on other rosters. Like, I think the Falcons are going to be one of those teams that have just a ton of guys that get claimed off of waivers after the initial round of cuts. Because there's just so much. I think this may be the first year for Dan Quinn where he's not as active, because usually they actually pick up one or two guys that matter around September, like Taylor Gabriel, Andy Levitre, guys that have been key Falcons contributors came in after the roster cuts or came in when September was getting underway. So I think this might be the very first year where Atlanta isn't as active, and they don't really have to be, because now they're the guys that are providing these players for other teams that can go have other careers elsewhere. Let's talk about the young guys just for a second. I know this is going to be a tough year for some of these preseason darlings, and we haven't had as many develop this year it seems like, just because the talent has been so much. I think that's kind of telling that we're not going to have as many guys get cut this year. They're going to really make fans sad, just the whole fact of we just have so many spots that have already been claimed. Jonathan Celestine seems to be a guy who I think may end up sticking around on the 53, just because of everything he's done in such a short amount of time. What are you seeing from him? Like, really, just out of nowhere, just ever since that Jets game has happened, we've been talking about him, and it's been pretty consistent for what he's been doing on the defense. Do you think that this might be the guy that ends up being cut that hurts everybody, that kind of was like Jermaine Grace last year that ended up getting cut a little bit later in the season? Or do you think that Celestine's actually going to be one of those guys that sticks around and actually has a career here?
I think at minimum he has secured himself a spot on the practice squad. And I do think there is an outside shot that he will make the 53-man roster. A lot of that is going to depend on, honestly, the how they play out each of the positions and how deep they want to go in each of the positions. We know Deion Jones, Duke Riley, Devondre Campbell, Foye Olukun, those guys are essentially guaranteed a spot. And you know, for a fifth linebacker, you're looking at, you know, guys like Kamal Ishmael, you know, a veteran that they brought back in, Emmanuel Ellerby, another veteran. You know, Celestine is competing against those guys, but I think he's got a shot. And that is the thing. You know, he grew up in Jonesboro, just south of, you know, south of Atlanta. And it's a really cool story. It's been awesome to see him develop. I hope he makes the 53-man, because what I've seen from him is he's a dynamic playmaker. He just seems to find his nose to the ball and is making plays. And that's, you know, that's not something that you can necessarily teach. And it's not just athleticism. This guy finds a way to be around the ball almost every single play. And I love that about him. And he plays at a nonstop high level. He's constantly going. It looks like he's got one of those nonstop motors that we love to talk about. And it looks like it fits him to a T. I do think there's an outside chance he makes the 53-man roster. It'll be really interesting if you're into these, you know, the last 5 to 10 positions on the Falcons roster. Definitely watch the fourth preseason game, because the amount of playing time that Celestine gets and how he does in that opportunity could be the difference of whether the Falcons try to stash him on the practice squad or whether they feel like he's too good to expose to waivers.
Yeah, and again, like you're saying, what a story. Like, people forget, like, when some of these guys come in, he came in at, like, the beginning of August, like, and he had gotten cut from a team, I guess, that didn't feel – that's what I want to know, is who in the world cut this guy, because it feels like they're now kind of sitting there like, oh, boy, this was not a smart decision. We probably shouldn't have exposed this guy to waivers. Because he's been doing really, really well for a guy to come into a system and not having been with the team all summer. And now it's like one of the guys we're talking about that could end up sticking around that's an undrafted guy. Quite a story. Another guy that I want to talk about that obviously is a much bigger position would be Ben Kurt. Do they keep him? I don't know. He has been the most promising developmental quarterback that has come through this team probably since Sean Renfrey or Dominique Davis. And that's way back into the Smith era, like 12 and 13. So, and obviously those guys didn't really go on to do anything, but the team, I think they kept both of those guys for a brief period of time. So is this the year they keep three quarterbacks and keep one of them as a developmental guy now that Schaub's deal is ending next year? Or do you think that Ben Kurt has been enough of an up and down player to where they're comfortable with losing him on the practice squad?
I think with where the Falcons are from a roster standpoint, they're going to have a hard time justifying carrying a third quarterback this year. Mm-hmm. That said, I could easily see Ben Kurt taking up one of those practice squad spots so long as he makes it through waivers. And there's no reason to think that he wouldn't, because again, for a team to claim him off waivers, they basically have to give him a spot on their 53-man roster. And I'm not sure that he's the guy that you want to be your number two just yet. I like his potential. I like what he's shown. But in all honesty, I think there's been a lot of talk about him this preseason with Falcons fans. But we have to remember, most of the action that he has seen has been against guys who aren't going to be on an NFL roster come September. So we've got to keep that in mind. I like his potential, but I think ultimately it's going to be seen on a practice squad for the Falcons.
Yeah, I think that will end up being where it is. I would not be surprised to see one of these like quarterback kind of, you know, stop and go teams where they have a different guy every snap, just about starting for quarterback, picking him up and stashing him. I think there's a bit of a Joe Callahan-y potential there where he kind of bounces around the league as being one of those, like, you know, he put that tape up there and we're going to take a chance on him because we think there might be something there and there may not actually be something there in the long side. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him go to a team and kind of get stashed, if it's, particularly if it's not a great team and they feel like that they just want to see if this guy has anything. But I think the most likely scenario is he gets cut and he ends up on the practice squad, and that, you know, Atlanta gives him a year in their developmental program and seeing if he makes the developments that would help him maybe hold that backup spot down the road. After that, I don't know if there's anybody that could really surprise that's an undrafted guy. I think defensive tackle is a spot where – now, I do like Anthony Wimbush a lot. I think Wimbush has actually been a pretty sound pass rusher. Not an athletic guy, but very much a tactician, a bit like a Dwight Freeney almost. Obviously not comparable in talent, but, you know, a guy that may not possess that – natural athleticism, but just is so smart and is so good with the technique, you know, the technique that he's able to make the play. I remember that Jets game in particular, he was just like he was in the backfield every other play. So I'm very curious. I don't think he'll make the roster as it stands, but I do think that he could end up being an interesting, like a JT Jones almost, and which is a guy who I actually think could make the roster this year and kind of develop and be something down the road because he was so productive at Ball State. Maybe watch for Justin Zimmer, the situation with him, Garrison Smith, and John Cunningham. Those three guys, it feels like it'll end up being one of them that stick. I think they would carry kind of maybe an extra defensive lineman to kind of give them a flexible thing because those guys have all been impressive at different spurts. From those three, who do you think has the best chance?
That's tough. You know, I like what I've seen from Zimmer in the playing time that he's had. Garrison Smith, I think, has a little bit of a pedigree that he comes with that, you know, fans would definitely be interested in seeing a Georgia player finally make it onto the Atlanta Falcons. Honestly, of those two, and I can't say much about Cunningham. He hasn't jumped out to me. So I'm going to say between Zimmer and Smith, I've actually seen more of the big plays out of Zimmer, at least to, you know, from my mind's eye, what I can remember. So I think he's a guy that could sneak onto this roster in that last role where he's going to be inactive on Sundays. But, you know, hopefully with the way injuries are in the NFL, you know, he's someone that you could potentially lean on for limited snaps if you need to.
Yeah, no disrespect to our folks at this, but I know Stephen White is a wonderful analyst and writer, but I do think that his breakout candidate might end up somewhere else when the season is going on, and then it may just be a breakout candidate for a different team. I think that Zimmer would get it because I think he seems to be like he's impressing more of the right people. Pro Football Focus really seems to enjoy his performances, and I've mentioned him before. And again, he's got that athleticism the team really likes. And it's not to say Smith doesn't have it, but I think with Justin Zimmer, there just seems to be like one of those things where they know the player is going to be inactive regardless. And maybe they feel like Smith could maybe go be a bigger part of a team elsewhere. And maybe that they don't really need that guy inactive, but they want a guy that they can develop a bit more and maybe plug in later because Terrell McClain still's up after this year. We don't know where Crawford still is going to go after this. They're really only the two players that we know will be there in the future are great. And going to be spots for this lineup to have defensive tackles to develop in the future. So I think either guy has a good chance. And I think that next Thursday's game or Friday, whenever our next preseason bout is going to tell where that spot goes, or even if they want to keep five defensive tackles, they may just want to keep the four they have and call it a day. But yeah, I think that the roster's pretty well set. There's not really many guys outside of the ones we've just talked about that I think could. I know that Matt Gono has a lot of support, and I think he might end up sticking around as a swing or a kind of a flexible veteran. But then again, like, you don't want to round out Sean Harlow too soon. So I think that Gono may end up being one of the cuts that kind of make people upset. That's really where I think the roster is. As we're kind of looking at the team from a whole, what are your parting thoughts as we kind of wind this episode down for what you're taking from Atlanta as they kind of round out their starters for the preseason and kind of get ready for the Eagles?
Yeah, I think there's the depth, again, this is the thing that's jumping out to me. We're seeing a lot of quality play from guys who are going to be backups. Even some of the wide receivers we've had in camp have shown a lot of big plays, to the point where, you know, Russell Gage has made some great plays, Devin Gray, Dontez Byrd, and probably Gage is the only guy that's going to be there when the cuts are done. Even Reggie Davis, I think between him and Marvin Hall, you know, Davis is probably going to be another of those odd men out, simply because of Jones, Hardy, Ridley, Sanu, and Hall and Gage all getting a roster spot. And he's had, you know, some really nice plays as well. And then, you know, you look at Demonte Kazee, like I said earlier, this guy could be potentially a starter at free safety for half the teams in the league. And he's our backup. And that's just the depth and quality of the depth on this roster is unlike anything I've seen, which is why not only are they being called the best roster, the most talented roster the Falcons have ever had, there are a lot of people arguing that the Falcons this year have one of the best rosters in the NFL, period. So that is, you know, high praise, and that's coming from outside of Falcons fandom. That's coming from national writers who are saying that the talent in Atlanta is real, it's deep, and it is championship caliber in its totality. So we may not be seeing it in the preseason, but again, under Dan Quinn, we never do. So let's wait till the regular season gets here to see that talent reach its potential.
Yeah, I think that's on point, man. I think that, you know, the biggest question I have going into the season outside of how Sarkisian develops is what is going to be elite? Because when you look at all of these Super Bowl teams, they have at least one factor to their lineup that is elite. Typically, it's an entire side of the ball that is elite. When you look at Philly last year, they had a top 10 offense and probably a top 2-3 defense. And that's what helped them kind of get past Brady and Belichick at that critical stage. What is Atlanta going to have this year that is fully elite? And I think it's got to be when you're looking at either the secondary or the offensive weaponry. I think Ryan's an elite quarterback. Always will. I think he's a top 5 talent. And I think if he is able to see that offensive weaponry come alive this year, like we all kind of hope it does, it really could be special. Like, you really could be one of the best offensive weapon groups in the NFL. I think the secondary has a ton of run right now with, you got Trufant, Alford, Poole. If Oliver's able to get some snaps, Way Wilson and Bethel is just excellent, excellent corner depth for your 5th and 6th spots, potentially. Your safety group with Keanu and Ricardo, and obviously because he's doing so well, Ron Parker is back there. They've got so many options on those two sides of the ball, but they've got to live up to, I think, the potential. I think that's where Atlanta wins a championship, is having that secondary just flying around and kind of building its own no-fly zone, Legion of Boom almost reputation in the league, and then also looking at that offensive weaponry and just going back to that pick-your-poison offense that got them so far in the Mike Smith era. To me, those are the only two players. And then obviously with Devonta and Tevin on the ground and fielding an elite ground game that obviously has to be supplanted by the offensive line. Because I think right now, I mean, the linebacking group is really, really good. We've got to see Duke get better. He's going to have the spot going into the season. So hopefully when Deion is out there, he's able to show more of those flashes than those flops. But I don't know. There seems to be like this – it feels like there's just a little bitty thing missing that worries me. There's just like this little thing this team doesn't have. Like, maybe it's just one less star than somebody else. Or maybe it's just that hopefully that we can begin to see some other things begin to cover that up. But I think that's the one thing that bugs me going into the year, is like, it feels like they're just so, so, so good. But I don't know how many just like amazing, amazing, amazing factors they have. Like, they got so many really good ones. But when you look at these Super Bowl teams, like, there's always like one or two elements to them that are like best. And I'm just curious exactly where Atlanta will have that. Do you think that they could have something I'm missing? Or do you think that it's just one of those things where we're going to have to see maybe that develop as the season goes on?
I think we'll have to see it. But I do think there are some key names that we can pay attention to that I think could become game changers. I think Deion Jones obviously is one of them. He's one of the 5 best linebackers in the league already. Does he make a play for being one of the top 2, top 3 linebackers up there with someone – some of the elite names in the league. Honestly, I think Tack McKinley, you know, if he makes a big jump, he was good last year. He was one of the best rookie pass rushers in the NFL last year. And I think that was with the injuries and being banged up a little bit. if he takes a leap, he could be a terror on the edge. When we're talking about, you know, that defensive line, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, honestly, I think it's going to be more about depth and quality, and sort of what we saw in 2016, where it's going to be less about, you know, the elite superstar like Julio Jones. And you see Matt Ryan, if he gets the time, spreading the ball to guys further down the roster, where you see a Marvin Hall getting touchdowns, where you see an Eric Saubert coming out of nowhere and getting a touchdown, where you see these guys that, you know, when you're thinking of Austin Hooper, all of a sudden he's delivering it to a Saubert. When you're thinking of Julio Jones, all of a sudden he's delivering it to Marvin Hall. You know, I think that is where the eliteness will come in. It's going to be that ball distribution. So I do think there is talent there that can become elite talent, the kind of talent that can change a game. We've seen glimpses of it in many of these players. You know, again, to my mind, Deion Jones, it flashes. We think of the big plays, game-changing plays. He's one of those guys. So I think there are a lot of guys where there's a ton of potential for that. Which makes me excited, and for the first time, we're seeing it on both sides of the ball. We know Julio is as elite as it gets. You know, he is a generational talent at wide receiver, but now we're seeing several of those guys on the defensive side that have sort of that top end potential to be elite. You know, and I didn't mean to leave his name out, but Grady Jarrett, I think, is another one that you could argue, you know, extensively for as far as being able to be in that top five. Top 10 conversation if he reaches his potential. So I think there is a ton of guys for which we can keep our eye on that could potentially be, to your point, Corey, those game changers, those guys that make the play that stands out in NFL films for the next 30 years.
Yeah, I think that's on point, man. I'm glad that we have guys that can live up to that, because I think in 16, the one that lived up to that was in the booth, because you had probably the best play caller of the decade having his best season. So I'm really excited that we're going to begin to see more of these guys that they drafted live up to being those guys that everybody in the league is talking about on set on a Monday morning. But I think, you know, they'll do it this week. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Corey. I just want to inject one thing, because I know we've heard a lot about Kyle Shanahan and how amazing he was in 2016, but I've been wanting to say this for a while, and I apologize for jumping in and interrupting you. But
here's your platform.
Here's the thing: in all the prior years when you know, before Shanahan got to Atlanta and had a great quarterback like a Matt Ryan, you know, he had some decent defenses, but he never had a record-setting offense like the one he had in 2016. So I think people who are giving Shanahan all the credit are taking away a ton of the credit that does still belong with Matt Ryan, that still belongs with Alex Mack, that still belongs with Julio Jones, that still belongs with Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman and the talent that's here. And I think when you take that into consideration, and that's not to take anything away from Shanahan, because you don't have a top 10 record-setting season without everything going right. But I do think a lot of the components that made that successful are here, and they can, even if not duplicate the 2016 offense, they can give you something that will be nearly as exciting and productive, even if we don't have the mastermind behind it all.
I think that is very encouraging, because there have been times where I look at this offense, and obviously you know who the talented guys are, but you look at the offensive line, you look at maybe the tight end core, you look at things here and there, and I'm kind of like, I'm pretty sure that was just Kyle making the magic happen. But I think the good thing about the offense is that I think that they both made each other better for the long run. Like, I think Matt Ryan is a better quarterback because he was with Shanahan. I think that this offensive line would be better than they were under Smith because of Kyle Shanahan. I think you look at maybe the tight end group. I think you look at some of those, particularly Austin Hooper. I think he will end up being a good tight end because he had that year with Shanahan. So I think that, but at the same time, I think that Shanahan was able to do what he did because he had so many really good pieces living up to their potential. So I think that we'll never see that again. I'm never going to expect another Falcons offense quite like that, but I don't think that they necessarily have to replicate that to win a Super Bowl because of what this defense could potentially do, and also just with the talent that they already have on the roster. So no, I think that that needed to be said, because I think that sometimes people get worried that when Shanahan left, the window just closed, and that the Falcons are going to be always good without him, but never quite as good. But I don't think that's the case. I think they can still, you know, rectify 28-3 with what they have right now. So That'll wrap us up, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We are always happy to have you stop by. We're going to be back next week to, you know, we'll probably do a bit of a delay until the final roster comes out and kind of talk about that preseason game, talk about who the final roster is, and kind of look at the preseason as a whole and try to decipher what it means. And as we'll kind of have a quick turnaround there because the regular season gets started on a Thursday this year. The Falcons will kick off against the Eagles up in Philly on Thursday Night Football. We'll get to hear Al and Chris continue to bemoan us for what happened in the Super Bowl and bring it up at the worst times because that's just what they do. They love to talk about it because that's what the big announcers like to talk about. So we'll make it. Thank you guys for listening, of course. And we've got a long season ahead. Hopefully we'll still be doing this into next February. Fingers crossed. But DW, thank you for coming on. Obviously, you're a staple to these years for good reason. Let them know where they can find you if they don't already have a link into you.
Yeah, if you like reading awful takes and being tortured by poorly put together words, follow me on Twitter at FalcoholicDW.
All right, that is DW, and of course, listen to he and Gina's Falcoholic podcast that tends to go up midweek. And then also make sure you're always listening for our Falcoholic live show that Kevin Knight and Eric Robinson are responsible for. The audio content has no limits here. We've got plenty of things for you all week long, whatever you need with the Falcons. So always tune into that. You can find me on Twitter at Corey Woodruff 47. Follow along with everything we're doing over at the Falcoholic at, of course, the Falcoholic and thefalcoholic.com. This has been Corey Woodruff with the Falcoholic Postgame Podcast. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll be back next week to wrap up the preseason and get into whatever's going on with the regular season. Thanks, guys.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation. And I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.